You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, it's investigative reporting on Reveal. Tonight, Reveal heads to Jacksonville, Florida, one of the most divided cities in America, for a look at policing, immigration, education, and other issues through the eyes of people with very different perspectives. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, since the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia almost a year ago, there have been only 8 justices on the bench of the nation's highest court. Former President Barack Obama had previously nominated Judge Merrick Garland to fill the seat, though no action was taken to confirm him. And President Trump says he'll announce his pick to fill that seat tomorrow evening.
But what if the court stayed at 8 justices for good? It's an idea supported by our next guest, who wants to shake up how the court does business. He says Congress should permanently set the number of justices at 8 and keep a balance between Republican and Democratic appointees.
Eric Siegel joins us now. He's a professor of law at Georgia State University's College of Law, and he recently published a paper titled 8 Justices Are Enough, a proposal to improve the United States Supreme Court. Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me tonight. Good evening.
Well, before we get into the practicalities of this 8-justice court, you're saying this would improve the Supreme Court. So what's wrong with the way the Supreme Court currently works?
Well, that could take a much longer show than we have. But I think there are many issues with our justices, and many of them are tied to life tenure. We have the only high court in the world, whose justices serve for life. And, you know, when you are given a lot of governmental power, which they have, and it's more or less unreviewable, which it is, and you're told you can have your job for life, you're going to end up seeing the vague value judgments in the law the way you want to see them. The Constitution is extraordinarily difficult to apply and interpret, and personal values are going to seep in the best of circumstances. But given life tenure and how our tradition of judicial review has evolved, the justices end up doing pretty much what they want. So we've had periods in American history where an ideologically aligned majority of justices has imposed their will on Americans in some pretty ugly ways. Just quick examples. From 1900 to 1935, the court struck down over 200 state and federal laws involving unions and worker safety and minimum wages, all of which would be legal today because 5 or more justices could. On the other hand, some people think the Warren Court went way too far in its protection of fundamental rights and that kind of thing. And a lot of people think the Roberts Court has gone much too far in choking off avenues for redress for people who are injured. So the problem is what we really have in this country is a unique political institution made up of really political officials we call judges, but who really act more like politicians. And that's a real problem. Those are the problems as I see them.
And we've talked to a guest before with a group that wants some kind of term limits from the U.S. Supreme Court, but that's a really tall order.
Right. The problem with that is that would take a constitutional amendment. So I'm in favor of that. But that really can't happen. And, you know, once you open up the constitutional amendment process, things get very dicey. My proposal not only does not require a constitutional amendment, but my proposal is also in the interest of both political parties. And in 2017 America, there were virtually no proposals that are in the interest of both political parties. But mine happens to be. And I want to say also that although I self-identify as, you know, kind of a progressive, not kind of a progressive, I made this proposal long before anybody thought Trump would win. I mean, I thought this was the right thing to do back in May and June and July of last year, and then even after Hillary. You know, this is a nonpartisan proposal that would improve one of the 3 branches of government significantly, and it happens to be in the long-term interests of both Republicans and Democrats. Having said all that, obviously it's not going to happen anytime soon, although you never know. So what's going to happen in the next, you know, few weeks is the president's going to nominate somebody, and the Democrats are going to filibuster, almost certainly, and the Republicans will probably end the filibuster. But they may not be able to. You know, if 3 or 4 Republicans switch, this could be a long, 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 drawn-out process. If that happens, you know, you never know. You never know.
Talking to Eric Siegel from the Georgia State University College of Law, he says 8 is enough when it comes to U.S. Supreme Court justices. He wants to see a change in procedure here. Instead of nine, with an ideological balance maybe shifting all the time, keep eight, keep four appointed by each side of the aisle. So, Eric, we're seeing this in action now for generally considered liberal justices, for generally conservative justices. And a lot of people are saying, oh, the Supreme Court's shorthanded, bad, not working, ties, not resolving anything. You see this as a good thing. Why?
Yes, no, it's been great. So, first of all, the sky hasn't fallen. No matter what anybody, you know, clearly the sky has not fallen. And it's been over a year. What an eight-person, evenly divided court has to do, and let me say my proposal doesn't work unless it's four Republicans and four Democrats, but we have a model for that in the Federal Election Commission, which by law has to be even number. So we could do this. No, with an even number of Republicans and Democrats on the court, then the justices have to have more narrow decisions, more bipartisan decision-making in the cases that divide the court. Now, I should say 80% of Supreme Court cases are not decided 5-4 when there's a nine-person court, and almost half are unanimous. So this would the federal Supreme Court's ability to maintain the uniformity and supremacy of federal law wouldn't go away in 80% of the cases. In the 20% of the cases, historically, where they've been 5-4, which would now be 4-4, and probably a tie, the justices would have to do something because they wouldn't want to lose their power over time. No governmental official, no matter how well-intentioned, wants to lose their power over time. So what they would do is make narrower decisions, more incremental decision-making, and I think that would be a good thing, and that's how judges are supposed to act. The other thing is, if the court does tie 4-4, and if it's four Republicans and four Democrats, which it almost always would be, then the case doesn't go away in the sense that nothing happens. The lower court decision would be the law of the land. There are 12 courts of appeals, and those are hundreds of judges who are much more diverse politically, educationally, and geographically than the nine lawyers who sit in Washington their whole lives. And the reason that's important is, in almost every constitutional law case that comes before the court, the question is, should the justices replace a rule made by other people, the Congress, the states, the people, with their own views? That's the question. Are the justices going to replace a rule decided by other people with their own rule? And they shouldn't do that unless they're pretty sure. And my proposal then requires at least one Republican to vote with the Democrats or one Democrat to vote with the Republicans. At the turn of the century, there was a big at the turn of the 20th century, in the early 1900s, there was a big debate about whether the court should even ever displace a state or federal law on a 5-4 vote, that maybe there should be more clarity than that. And I agree with that. And that's why I say it's in the long-term interests of both political parties and, for that matter, the American people for this proposal, because the court wouldn't strike down laws unless there was some bipartisan buy-in. And I think that's important.
But here's where it gets weird, because you mentioned those appeals courts. Maybe one appeals court over here rules yes. The one over there rules no. The Supreme Court, they're deadlocked. And so now we've got a different set of federal laws or a different view on federal laws applying in those five states versus these four states.
Now, so that's the most common objection to this plan. And here's the response. Right now, 99.999% of all state and federal cases never get to the Supreme Court, ever. So in those 99.99% of cases, the objection you just made doesn't apply, obviously, because the Supreme Court never hears the case. In the 75 cases a year the court takes, as I mentioned earlier, only 20% are 5-4. So of those 15 cases, the question is how many will raise the kind of uniformity issue you're concerned about? And the answer is virtually none. So here's the thing. I'm pro-choice. I would like the whole country to be pro-choice. I am – whatever my views are, I want the whole country to have them. But it's not because of uniformity. It's because I think my views are best. And the reality is we've had different rules about abortion, affirmative action, gun control in the states, you know, across the country for a very long time. It's almost never necessary for there to be a national rule for national rule's sake, but there are times. I concede with securities regulation, you know, disputes and other economic planning controversies, we need one rule. No one's more critical of the Supreme Court than I am, but let me say this. Everybody who serves and has served on the Supreme Court loves court and loves country. They do. They're patriots. They're hardworking civil servants. If the fate of the country requires one national rule, they will find a way to compromise, and they will find a way to get it done. They will, because they're patriots. They do. They care about America. That case is very, very, very rare. I mean, really rare. So the uniformity objection really doesn't, to me, carry a lot of weight, since we almost never care about it anyway, because as I said at the beginning of this monologue, 99.9% of cases in America never get to the Supreme Court.
We're talking to law professor Eric Segal. He's proposing a reform for the United States Supreme Court. He's saying, forget nine, we should have eight justices serving, four Democrats, four Republicans. He says that would force the court to work harder to reach narrower decisions in its most difficult cases and be less able, if there's an ideological majority, for them to impose their agendas on the American people.
You can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea of a Supreme Court with only eight justices? Do you think it would better serve the public, or would it create more problems? And whether it's this idea or something else, do you think the Supreme Court is in need of some kind of reform? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation with Eric Segal, professor of law at Georgia State University. He recently published a paper called Eight Justices Are Enough, a proposal to improve the United States Supreme Court.
The plan, eight justices, four appointed by Democrats, four Republicans, liberal, conservative, even split. He says things will be better. Things will work better. No ideological majority imposing decisions on the public. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Would eight justices instead of nine better serve the public if they're evenly split? Do you think that would generate compromise or confusion? Does the Supreme Court need to be tinkered with in the first place? Do you see problems, or are you happy with the way it works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Seth is on the line in Mequon. Seth, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
So I actually was not into the idea until he explained it further. Now I'm sort of on board, but my question is, personally, I'm libertarian, and I was wondering how would this work if a third party such as the Libertarian Party were to break into politics in
America? That's a great question, Seth. Seth, that's a great question, and I do address that in the paper. So first of all, I think that's reasonable. Like, what about independence? My proposal includes a subsection, if you were, that says that if a person identifies as an independent or refuses to identify their political party affiliation, then they can still get in the Supreme Court, but it would take a two-thirds, as opposed to a majority, vote of the Senate. It would take a two-thirds vote, and they would count as the political party of the nominating president. So I do have an out for that. But let me tell you why that objection, while reasonable, I don't think torpedoes the proposal at all. There are no independent Supreme Court justices. I mean, virtually every Supreme Court justice of the last 50 years, we have known their political party affiliation, because guess what? To be nominated to the Supreme Court, you pretty much have to have an identifiable political party affiliation. Having said that, I am sensitive to the charge that this proposal does ensconce the two-party system even more. But you know what? Given the unfortunate state of affairs in America, where we have this strong two-party system, I think the dramatic improvement to the court, and by the way, we haven't talked about the confirmation process, which would be improved tremendously by this proposal, that outweighs the objection you're making, which is a very reasonable objection. Can I talk about the confirmation process for 1 minute?
Yeah, go for it.
Best. What right now, the political nature of our Supreme Court is determined by death, serious illness, or politically timed retirements. That is insane. So, for example, Justice Ginsburg, who is an American hero, and, you know, you're not going to find more important people in this country's history than Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We, you know, liberals are rooting for her to last four more years, and no matter how sick she gets. Like, if you asked a really well-meaning liberal, what if she gets really, really sick and can't do the job, they would say, she should stay on the job. That makes no sense at all. And another example of that is Justice Thurgood Marshall, another American hero, who thought Bill Clinton was going to lose to the first President Bush, so he retired because he was very sick, and then Clarence Thomas got put on the court. If Marshall had thought Clinton was going to win, which he didn't, and if he had hung on another year, there would have been no Clarence Thomas. Without Clarence Thomas, there's no Citizens United, there's no Heller gun decision, there's no Shelby County voter ID decision. To make our country's, you know, socioeconomic legal policy determined by death, sickness, or politically timed retirements is crazy. Under my proposal, if a Democratic justice wants to resign, she'll know she'll be replaced by a Democratic justice, or vice versa.
Seth, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Cindy in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the only time anybody seems to have a job until they die is if they own their own company, and I think this is ridiculous. And to bring new ideas and new blood, I think this would be a great way to churn this out and have a more fair system. And how do you move this forward?
Well, so if there was the political will to do so, it would be easy. The Constitution doesn't have a number of justices. That is up to Congress. By the way, the original number was six. For those originalists out there, I'm not one, but for those originalists, the original number was six. Then it went to nine. And in 1869, Congress passed a law saying nine. Congress could pass a law tomorrow saying eight. So that's the first step. That's easy. That's fully constitutional. The second step would be passing another law saying that there have to be four Republicans and four Democrats on the court, or pick any even number and divide it by two. They've already done that with the Federal Election Commission, so they know how to do that. Now, the president could nominate anybody he or she wants. In other words, I can't stop. It would be unconstitutional to limit the president's nominating power. But the Senate doesn't have to approve anybody, as we learned over the last year. So the Senate could say, you can send us whoever you want to send us, but we're not going to approve them unless they are the same political party as the justice who retired or died. So it wouldn't be hard if the political will was there. Now, one more thing about that. When I have this, when I talk about this proposal publicly, people say the Federal Election Commission is terrible. Nothing gets done. They're always deadlocked. And that's true. It's been a disaster. But the reason for that is because there's only one, and if an issue, an important issue, is before the commission and they're deadlocked, nothing gets done. If the Supreme Court deadlocks, that's not true. The lower court decision will be the law, and that does a lot of good. So it's not the same. In other words, it's not the same roadblock. So I think we have a model for this, how to do it. All we need is the political will.
Cindy, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Eric Siegel from the Georgia State University Law School. He says, forget nine justices, switch it to eight. Congress can do it. Make it four appointed by, backed by each party. Things will work better, he says. But here's the thing, as far as actually making it happen, if I'm the party with the president, I don't want to relinquish the power, especially if the president and the same party have a majority in the Senate, as is the case now. Who's going to give up the shot to appoint one or two or three justices, swing things in their favor?
That's a great question. I have two responses. The first is the filibuster, which requires 60 votes to end debate in the Senate, which is about to go away. And the Democrats took it away for lower court judges a couple years ago. The filibuster has worked the way it was supposed to work, if you believe in it, since the mid-18th century. Why would a majority party in the Senate agree to lose its power to the minority? The answer to that is because someday they'll be the minority. And really, think about the filibuster. It has absolutely played a major role in American history since the 19th century. In the early 1960s, civil rights legislation completely blocked the Senate from doing anything. The majority party had majority votes, but they went along with it because they knew someday they'd be the minority. That's the first answer. The second answer is, if I was talking to Ted Cruz today, if I was talking to Senator Mike Lee today, if I was talking to any senator on the Senate Judiciary Committee or in the Senate, I would say, in the long run, this reduces the ability of the Supreme Court to overturn your laws, whether you're in the majority, whatever. It does. It diminishes that ability. That's in your long-term interest. In addition, I would say, Senator Cruz, you're the one who's always yelling about states' rights. You're the one who thinks the court shouldn't, you know, interfere unless it's hopelessly unconstitutional. This furthers that goal. The court will be less able to strike down state laws because it'll take some bipartisan effort to do so. So forget tomorrow or next week. In the long run, this proposal helps you, Mr. Senator, no matter which party you're in. So that would be my argument.
So I want to touch on current events a bit here. President Trump expected to announce his nominee tomorrow evening to replace Antonin Scalia on the bench. What are you watching for? What are you expecting from the nomination and the confirmation?
Well, so about two months ago, I wrote that normally presidents appoint justices that will help them with the issues they care the most about. Now, that's not always true. For example, Ronald Reagan promised a female Supreme Court justice and then appointed Justice O'Connor, and you know, good for him for doing that. But most of the time, absent some identity politics, presidents appoint judges who will do what they want them to do. The thing Trump cares most about, besides money, from what I can tell, is he hates government regulation. He doesn't like, you know, he doesn't like environmental regulations. He doesn't like the federal government getting involved. Because of that, one of the people on his list, Gorsuch from Colorado, has been very public that he is willing to revisit the law of deference to administrative agencies, meaning he's more likely to strike agency regulations down. So that's my prediction. My prediction will be him, but apparently Trump's sister knows Judge Hardiman from the Third Circuit and likes him. So to the extent Trump's sister, who's a federal judge, by the way, to the extent Trump listens to his sister, who knows? And then again, who knows what he's going to do? By the way, from Judge Sykes from the Seventh Circuit, from your neck of the woods, mm-hmm. I just heard, was also interviewed. So I think she's, you know, I think she's probably high in the list as well.
And we'll have to leave it there. Eric, thanks for joining us. That was Eric Siegel, professor of law at Georgia State University's College of Law. We've been talking about his recently published paper, 8 Justices Are Enough, a Proposal to Improve the United States Supreme Court.
I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Farad. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.